This is an ABC podcast. Resorts, homes and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Mula, I'm Josiah Nanonga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia, and this is Pacific Prepared.
It's a show all about natural disasters, climate change, and traditional knowledge, and how these things are all connected. And you'll hear that through stories from right across the Pacific.
Each week we work with local reporters. They're on the ground letting us all know what's happening in this space and what people want to hear about.
On today's show, helping people relocate. An island nation, part of Papua New Guinea, has been slowly relocating residents for about 10 years now, and they're slowly running out of time.
Also, recent heavy rain has caused flooding in Tonga, so much so that water is now being pumped out of certain areas of the capital.
And helping to keep traditional knowledge alive in the Solomon Islands, why that's important, and what it actually looks like on the ground. That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
For over 10 years now, an NGO based in Bougainville, an island which is part of Papua New Guinea, has been helping to relocate people from the Carteret Islands. These are all people who want to move as well. It's all voluntary.
Well, Fred, that's interesting. Like, people are willing to move or to relocate. Could you just, like, remind me or shed some light on the location of this group of islands, Carteret Islands?
Well, they actually look closer on the map to Solomon Islands than they do to the main island of PNG. So they're basically to the northeast of Port Moresby.
Right. You know, I wonder why people would want to relocate, would want to move. And I suppose, you know, there could be some risk taking associated with the decision they made, considering that, you know, as we all understand, the Pacific people are all connected to their land. Eh? For example, here in Fiji, the Vanua. I wonder what's the root cause or why the people on that particular group of islands decided to move or to relocate.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're sort of left with much of an option now. They sort of have to move. The island is, you know, as you can imagine, it's slowly sinking. So it's only an atoll island, so it's pretty much when you look at it from above, you can just see the ring
right.
of the coral reef that's been left there.
Right.
There's not much land at all, so there's not much sort of room for movement there. If the ocean is rising at all, then they will be sinking, basically. So That's why they need to relocate.
Well, Pacific Prepared reporter and freelance journalist Ben Kedoga has been looking into this story.
I work for Tulele Pesa, which is a local organization of the Carteret Islanders, and it is specifically managing and coordinating the work on climate displacement and migration into mainland Bougainville.
Thank you so much, Ursula. How far have you gone, and what's the current status of the work that you are doing now in terms of moving the people from Carteret Island to the mainland and other surrounding areas?
Thank you, Ben. The work I'm currently doing is quite cumbersome because it involves a lot of other areas. Climate change is a cross-cutting issue, so it covers cultural security, it covers economic security, social security, environmental security, and political security. I have not progressed very well with moving other families, other than the 10 families that I have moved over the last 15 years. It's been very slow, the movement of islanders from the atoll to mainland Bougainville in other locations has been very slow because much of the construction that has happened has come in from churches and foundations internationally, but I have not had support internally from Papua New Guinea. We also would like to move more families before 2030, and so we have three other locations we have to move to. And last week we completed a four-day workshop where we actually looked at evaluation of Tulele Pesa and its program activities over the last 12 years, and also we looked at how we want to move forward, how we want to write our story, our own story. We want to write it the way we feel it. And so we now have a network where the community government has taken its leadership role in the relocation of the Cartridge Islanders. And so we have a more working relationship with the community government, with women and youth of Cartridge Islanders. So we have a work plan.
Thank you, Ursula. Thank you so much for the response. Now, one of the key things in this relocation exercise, in my view, is that the reluctancy of elders on the island to move due to cultural significance and for their own traditional beliefs and things like that as part of the Melanesian culture. Have you faced similar issues, or have you come across such issues during a time when you were doing the relocation of those families?
Over the recent years, due to fast shoreline erosion, you know, very strong winds, storm surges, king tides that continue to wash away the shorelines and erode, as well as destroy our food gardens, the chiefs and elders are beginning to rethink their position, especially with large families and the increase of population in particular. And also the islands are actually eroding really fast, where we have lost more than almost one quarter of the island being washed away. And we are talking here about five of the islands. Over the last 2 weeks when we had a workshop, the islanders had to map out, and when I mean islanders, I mean the chiefs, the community government, the young people and women as well, were able to map out their hotspots and the hazards that affect those hotspots. And they've drawn maps of all the islands and what those hotspots and the hazards are. And so from the maps, you can basically see that we are facing a disaster when it comes to the sea basically intruding into our food gardens and all that. And yes, I mean, I agree with the elders, because those are our homes. It's our island community. We were born on the island. They do not want to leave the island, but you know what does the future hold for the young people, the young population, children, or getting married and having children? What do we do with them? How do we continue to leave them on the island, or should we encourage them to move to safe and secure areas on mainland Bougainville?
In terms of the geographical structure of Cartridge Island, in terms of the shoreline and the physical appearance of the island, is it deteriorating faster than usual?
Maybe another thing I could add here, Ben, is that at the back of our island, especially the big island, we have a situation where the rocks at the back of the island are even breaking and allowing the sea to penetrate further into the land. And this is the strongest part of the island where it's rocky, and we are hoping it will keep as long as, you know, the islands can go. But when we see the back of the island, the stones breaking, it is an alarming situation where we are now beginning to rethink, and even the elders and the chiefs are now beginning to rethink whether the statement they have made over the last 15 years still stands, or they will actually have to start encouraging the younger generation to make a move on.
Thanks to Pacific Prepared reporter and freelance journalist Ben Kadoga for that story from Papua New Guinea.
What's your plan? Are you ready to leave your home? Plan now before disaster strikes. Pacific Prepared.
Well, we've been hearing stories about flooding, not only in Fiji and other Pacific islands in recent months, even though that most Pacific island countries are still in the cyclone season, where heavy rain that will eventually cause flooding may occur. And, you know, it's really, even today, Fred,
You've got heavy rain there as we're recording this.
Heavy rain continues to affect most parts of the country in Fiji from the beginning of the week right up until towards the end of this week. Yeah. And it's really interesting. And I've noticed that, some articles, some stories, some photos being shared that flooding is also happening, in a few countries across the region. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, Tonga also has been having a lot of heavy rain. And for a long period of time too. I think they've had it for a couple of weeks in a row. So bad now that they're actually required to pump some of the water out of the capital of Nuku'alofa.
Wow.
They're running sort of pumps with these huge big hoses running out to the big ocean, to the ocean water masses, to try and clear some of the water out of the town and some of the low-lying areas, which is incredible, really. Pacific Prepared spoke with our reporter Anasiu Falakano recently to find out a little bit more.
So lately today, it was a rainy day here in the kingdom, and we've been experiencing heavy rain since the past 2 weeks in Tonga. But it's not every day that it's raining. Some days there are some sunny days, but most of the days has been raining so far here in Tonga. The main island of Tongatapu and also Ha'apai, the island of Ha'apai and Vava'u and Ewa also. My understanding, the report from the Tonga Meteorological Services, the two newest, they were mostly sunny during these days.
That rain that you've had, has that caused any flooding across the country, Anasiu?
The flash flooding. So most of the low-lying areas and the most vulnerable areas were experiencing again flooding. So also the coastal areas around the Nuku'alofa area. So it is not unusual for them to experience flash flooding, but as they are prone to experience this because of their vulnerability of their areas, of the areas they are in. But for the past 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks, the amount of rainfall recorded was more than the average and the usual. So that's what happened. That's what's been happening.
Yeah, and you said that, you know, they're used to flooding, but is it maybe that it's been sort of pretty constant for the last 2 weeks? Like, it feels like it's been, you've had a lot more than usual too.
Yes, Fred.
So what sort of things are people experiencing? Like, have there been roads cut off? Have there been sort of shops having to close up, schools, that kind of thing? Or
yes, on the first day, I think it was Monday, the week before, most of the schools, the secondary schools and the primary schools, they were closed because due to the heavy rain and the flash flood also. And some of the main roads, especially in the low-lying areas, some were identified that it is no longer fit for transportation. And as such, the National Disaster Risk Management Office and the RMO and the Tonga Fire and Emergency Services are working even up to now. We're doing a water pumping operation to these vulnerable areas, especially the flooding areas, to help with the current situation, especially with the flooding, and especially schools, and not only schools, but also the roads and some of the households also experiencing flooding.
So the water pumping that's happening at the moment, have you seen that happen before? Because it's sort of like the NDRMO have got big pumps in place and then they're running massive hoses out to the ocean and big bodies of water to try and move some of the water around. There must be so much laying around.
This is what they do, the NDRMO and the related stakeholders. Fred, this is what they do in times of flooding. So it is not an unusual operation. Water pumping operation is not an unusual operation here in Tonga. They do this in times of tropical cyclones and especially flash flooding on low-lying areas.
Is there any indication from the Weather Bureau or the Met Service that the rain might ease and the floods might actually get a chance to subside soon?
So the warnings have been issued since... the past 2 days that Tonga will continue to experience the heavy rainfall because, as you know, Fred, we're currently in our wet season, our tropical cyclone season. So we are experiencing and looking up in the sky at the moment. I think it's going to be a rainy Easter for the main island of Tonga Tapu.
Anasi, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Fred. Malo Abuza from Tonga.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
Joe, we often hear about traditional knowledge, and that's part of what our program is about as well. But you might not think of, I guess, boats when we think about traditional knowledge. What's your experience been with this in Fiji?
Well, Fred, when you say about boat and traditional knowledge, that's one of the advocacy messages of some of the key climate warriors here in Fiji, advocating on the need to use traditional boats or canoes as a mode of sea transportation. It's interesting when you travel to outer islands, especially in the low group, eastern part of Fiji, you'll see that a lot of villages, especially Kambara Island, they are renowned as a traditional canoe makers here in Fiji. We term that as Wanga Wakabiti. And, Wanga Wakabiti, Onrua, that's, traditional method of sailing or commuting via sea or traversing via the ocean from islands to another. Yeah.
And this is something that gets passed down from generation to generation, is that right?
Yeah. The skills of building or making these canoes or mboto, we say it here in Fiji. They're different terms. And I would say that's one of the environmentally friendly mode of transportation nowadays, I would say.
Yeah, sure.
That's why it's been highly recommended by a lot of climate warriors, climate champions.
Yeah, okay.
Here in Fiji, climate advocates, yeah.
That's in relation to what we're about to talk about as well. So I think it's also fair to say that traditional knowledge examples could probably be found right across the Pacific, like in Fiji and everywhere. They use traditional knowledge in different kind of ways.
Right.
Our Solomon Islands-based reporter, Jeremy Guao, has been speaking with someone who's trying to maintain traditional knowledge. And she's talking about why it's so important to their communities.
Okay, hello, ¿qué tal? Tagio Tomas, Pacific Prepared, for having me. Nemblomi Millicent Bati and Miblo Solomon Islands, and I am the founder of Custom Keepers. Custom Keepers is an organization that I started last year, and its purpose is for us to help communities preserve our traditional knowledge and cultural heritage. Custom Keepers recognizes that a critical problem is the erosion of traditional knowledge and our cultural practices amongst our indigenous communities. And this is exacerbated by the climate crisis we're facing. So we work with climate vulnerable communities. So as we know, Langalanga, especially Lilisiana, Ambu, Kaloka, and Aoki Island, there's a huge, they face a severe issue around sea level rise. And I'm also from Lilisiana, so this is also the inspiration behind it. I've always just questioned, what can I do? How can I use my skills and talent to help my people, especially during this time of climate crisis? Because for Lilisiana alone, in the last 20 years, we've lost 26 meters of our sand bay. Yeah, so our village is getting narrower, but the population's increasing. Coming from a background where I'm so passionate about custom stories and our traditional knowledge, I started Custom Keepers in order to sort of help my community repatriate a lot of the traditional knowledge, especially around environmental protection and conservation, and our agriculture, just asking questions, how can we sort of use these knowledge in order to mitigate and adapt to the changing climate of today. Through our scoping, one of the sort of discoveries that we found on ground is that everywhere everyone talks about climate resilience, and how Pacific communities, Pacific Indigenous communities, are very resilient in the face of climate change. And whilst that's very true, it also does not extend for a lot of others within the community. And to me, this just validates that in order for a community, the entire community, to be resilient for climate crisis, we also need cultural resilience. And this means finding meaningful ways to revitalize our traditional knowledge and cultural heritage, our customary practices, and especially helping young people connect to that. So what we're currently doing is, especially for Langalanga Lagoon, we're rebuilding the traditional fai-fai, we call it. So fai-fais were the custom houses or custom schools that our ancestors designed purposefully for traditional knowledge exchange. And through rebuilding that, we're working with the community to ensure that it's the fai-fai is a place where our knowledge holders or our custom keepers, the ones who are left, we empower them and sort of equip them with the capacity that they need in order to start running these intergenerational storytelling exchanges or knowledge exchange, yeah, especially with the young people in the community. It's also helping young people understand the importance of our forara buildings. So forara is the stone reinforcements, because Langalanga people are also known for the artificial island building construction. And foraras are designed in a way where it helps sea level rise, to helps mitigate sea level rise. So currently in the communities, you'll see a lot of families reinforcing their homes that are threatened by sea level rise with the forara knowledge. But it's not widely spread, it's not widely shared.
If you've just joined in, welcome to the program. You're hearing from Milson Bati from the Solomon Islands. She's kind of like done everything. She's mostly known for being an advocate for young people and even climate change right across the Pacific.
Coming back to traditional knowledge, I know that at the moment we have, like, it's not popular for, you know, sort of some communities, hence we start losing our traditional knowledge, but Custom Keepers is doing a very good job trying to revive it. What are sort of some challenges trying in the space where you're trying to revive the traditional knowledge or customs, hence preparing for any disaster or sort of like a climate change or resilience and stuff?
The assumption that many have that we're trying to take us back to exist at a time that was long before us, you know, that's not what we're doing. What we're doing is we recognize the value that our traditional knowledge and cultural heritage hold, not just for us as a people, but there are vital practices that are sustainable that we've lost for a very long time. So, for example, in Langalanga now, just a few years ago, we made the news for dynamite fishing, which is a terrible practice, right? So to some extent, losing a lot of our respect or the axiology, the value around traditional knowledge, that's what we're trying to replace or revive, is for everyone in the community to see that these knowledges, these practices, they're all equally as valuable as institutional knowledge, Western science, or because in our own very traditional sort of ways of knowing, they all align too with the same values. Yeah. So it's been a challenge just to sort of help community see that, no, we're not trying to take us back to, you know, pre-colonization days, but we see the importance and the value of especially a young person navigating this contemporary world today. We see the importance and the value that they can have if they have custom education as well as a Western education. If we lose our islands because our customs are so deeply embedded in our physical land, if we lose that, we lose who we are.
Thanks to Pacific Prepared reporter Jeremy Gua for that story from the Solomon Islands.
Joe, thanks for your help on the program this week and all your insights. Really appreciate it. And stay dry when you're going outside and stay safe in all seriousness, because I know there's been a lot of rain around the Pacific.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Fred. I'll stay dry and warm, especially with the recent rain almost every day. Until next week, I'm Josiah Nunga based in Fiji.
And I'm Fred Hooper based in Australia. Catch you next week, Joe.
Panaka.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josiah Nunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.